Why should I worry? Why should I care? In honor of a dog's purpose, what dog movie isn't horrible when you need to see a dog movie?
I'm Katie Rich, and I didn't know that Patterson, which came out last year and we've discussed on a top 10, I didn't know it was a dog movie until I saw it, but it is, and the dog is great, even though bulldogs are mostly stupid.
Hey, it's me, Dave with the Seven, and Homeward Bound. It's sassy, sappy at the end, but worth it.
And I'm David Sims, and why have one dog when you can have many hilarious dogs in Best in Show?
They are hilarious, aren't they?
They're so funny.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good. Then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Fighting in the War Room, episode 152 for Tuesday, January 24th on this day in 2016. We've been really doing recent history lately. The X-Files returned. That was just last year. Remember that? It happened. And then
yep. A
whole lot of other things happened in 2016. As you might have noticed, we have swapped a David for a David. David Sims, thank you for joining us this week.
Hello. I'm very honored to be here.
You are the host of the Blank Check podcast, which
that's true.
I am a big fan of and is relevant to our third segment this episode, where we'll be talking about M. Night Shyamalan's new movie. You watched every single M. Night Shyamalan movie that exists for your own podcast not so long ago.
Including Praying with Anger, his NYU student movie.
Which is not great, is what I remember.
He's the star of it, so, you know.
So take it.
Extrapolate from there.
That's a bellwether of quality.
As much as you are doing great so far, and we might like to replace you, replace Patches and David with you. They are at Sundance and apparently died in a snowbank and couldn't get it together to record a Sundance Dispatch. So we'll be ignoring the existence of Sundance on this podcast, which is just as well. There are other things going on in the world.
Absolutely.
But before we talk about those things, we're going to navel gaze and talk about some reviews. Dave, I heard we have new reviews.
We do. I'm going to try to pull a David Ehrlich and not pre-read any of these. So let's go. First one is by D-Dog Film, and it's The Carol of Podcasts.
Hey.
5 stars. 5 stars. A truly great podcast, as the title suggests, is The Carol of Podcasts, with the fellas and Katie bringing about a Bob, Ted, and Alice protagonist, a certain je ne sais quoi that wouldn't be found on crap like the Billions podcast. Why listen to a show on Billions when you could actually watch the show? Interesting topic. I'd rather have these four debate heavily about the day's pop culture grievances and know, hey, they hug it out at the, they bro hug it out at the end of the day. Well, probably not Katie. And baby bro fist,
bro
the
hug.
Newest fit word, Charlie, whose background sounds live in every new episode as a pseudo laugh track if David is eating too curmudgeon-y or Jordan Hoffman is there fishing up the place. And fishing spelled with a PH.
Well, yeah, that's what Jordan Hoffman does.
For sure. That's his trademark. Another review by Tiamat08. They're better than Ezra Cast. 5 stars. Patches. We get a dark, frothy beer at a dimly lit pub and discuss the new Hollywood films of the 70s. Katie. She listens to my relationship troubles and subtly psychoanalyzes the problem that is me. David. We take a tour of a Dada Movement art installation, and he gives me a world-class education on its meaning and why he hates it. Dave, we play Star Wars Battlefront until 3 a.m. Love you all.
That review. Those are some good ideas.
Yeah.
I don't know what Star Wars Battlefront is, but it sounds like a thing you would do.
It's a video game. That's great.
I got
surround
that
sound
in
60
clues.
Frames per second. So accurately modeled. Don't get me started. And the last review is from Definitely Not a Dolphin. The best film podcast about dolphins. 5 stars. This review is best read in a non-dolphin accent. Already there. It happens all too often. You are listening to a film podcast, enjoying the discussion, when suddenly the topic inevitably turns to dolphins. What is it about the human race that makes us so obsessed about these aquatic mammals? Thankfully, dolphins are almost entirely absent from the Fighting in the War Room's interesting and varied discussions on movies, television, and related pop culture. David may be an acquired taste for some listeners, but I've found that my opinions on movies align with his more often than any other critic. Katie is the captain who holds the show together and keeps it from sinking into dolphin-infested waters. Patches is Patches. Dave is a good friend that knows everything about geek culture and seems to be in a perpetual state of surprise whenever he is called upon to talk. There are no dolphin hosts, but I imagine that if A, dolphins understood English, and B, they were given waterproof headphones, that they would very much enjoy Fitwer as a relief from the endless dolphin topics on other podcasts. Please keep up the amazing show. P.S. Please never do a lightning round on your favorite movies with dolphins in them. Ooh, narrowly dodged this week, definitely.
I know. We came so close. I really enjoy how dadaist our reviews are getting. David says, I have an important question for you. Have you ever watched Billions, our nemesis?
I saw the pilot of Billions. I believe that is it. I think everything else was simply described for me over Twitter. So there's definitely a scene where someone pees on someone.
Oh, God, and that's going to be so politically relevant.
That's true.
So if the Billions podcast comes back, which I assume it will, you will not be Team Billions podcast.
Oh, I listen to every episode of that, but that's you just got to cover your bases.
Yes, it's essential listening. Well, thank you to everyone who's leaving reviews. Obviously, we continue to love them, even though I'm sorry that the Carol of Podcast review did not get read by David. It seems like it was really made for him. So next time, maybe we'll just have him read it again. But yeah, keep leaving us your reviews. We appreciate them immensely.
But wait, you're not being fair.
Fair's for tourists, kid. Consider it a free lesson in street savoir faire from New York's coolest quadruped. Check you later.
Hey, wait! I helped you get them! Animals
are mine! You want them? Come get them. Woo! Woo!
So as we record this today, Star Wars Episode 8 announced its title, which is The Last Jedi. And the first I saw of this news was broken to me by Dave Gonzalez on Twitter, who was saying, what does the red mean? Because the logo is red. And so David already deep dived into the potential meanings of this title before I knew it existed. Dave, what does the red mean?
Well, it's only notable because usually it's the third movie in a trilogy that's red, as of Revenge of the Jedi, which was the original Return of the Jedi title, and Revenge of the Sith, which had a red title. So it's just more crazy that like the second one is red. It's ominous and crazy. But yeah, I was fortunate to be scrolling through Twitter when this was announced. And I was like, 56 seconds ago, it was titled The Last Jedi. And I think fired off maybe like 50 tweets over the next 2 minutes. So, that's the way I roll.
Is this good news, or as Star Wars people, and David, both of you are Star Wars people in my estimation. Is this good news as like for Star Wars people?
Absolutely. Right, Dave. I mean, this is all those fake titles that were getting floated out there and all those, copyrights that were supposedly being taken by Disney or whatever.
Wait, what were they? I didn't hear any of these.
Dave probably remembers. And there are all these like long, convoluted, silly sounding Temple of the Jedi's. I don't know. It's the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and like The Last Jedi is just so clean. It's so short. It's so it's interesting, right? We're all obsessing over what exactly it could mean. It's exactly what I wanted.
For sure. There's even just fun trivia in these days where we know absolutely nothing about it. So like one of my favorite tweets was Return of the Jedi, The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, and then that escalated quickly gif from Anchorman. Just like all of a sudden they're like, they're back, and now it's the end. And then somebody else also pointed out that these are the first two titles that can be read together as a single phrase, The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi. It's still accurate. It's great. And then I think the other thing that immediately came to my mind is Rian Johnson's gone on record as saying that the title has not been changing throughout production and post-production, and that it's the same title he pitched with the script. And just the fact that he, in the midst of us not knowing if The Force Awakens was going to work as a movie or whatever, Rian Johnson sat down and Kathleen Kennedy's like, well, we don't do anything with Luke, so you get to like make all that up. And he looked down that daunting task and didn't balk, or at least has shown us promise in a title. I don't want to be Attack of the Clones here, because that title was also very exciting and that movie did not deliver on it at all. But I'm as confident as I can be that The Last Jedi is going to be good based on title alone. But I mean, let me think about it. I also have more facts, since this is the time for facts.
Yes, I want these. I want all the facts.
I want the facts, please.
The Star Wars Brazil official Brazilian Twitter initially tweeted out a translation that used The Last Jedi as both the singular and male version of the words. So that would imply, unlike in America, where Jedi is both plural and singular, and we don't know if the last Jedi was just Luke Skywalker, or the last Jedi was Luke and Rey, or the last Jedi was Luke and a whole bunch of other Jedi that have been hiding out on Octo. It seems like, at least maybe by accident, it's just going to be Luke Skywalker-centric. And we know sort of from, shooting and a little bit of behind-the-scenes rumors that there's going to be a significant part of the movie that is Luke and Rey focused, where I think we're going to have a lot of the Force explained to us. But the last is probably pointing in a new direction for the Force. So like,
so we're pretty certain the last Jedi is Luke.
I'm one to say yes, because I. The theory, the prevailing theory right now is that the line of the Sith has been broken when Emperor Palpatine died. And so now you have like dark side users like Snoke and Kylo Ren, but there's also like the Knights of Ren. So it's obviously like beyond the rule of two, which used to define the Sith. So the Jedi are just what they used to call this religious order that believed in the Force. So Rogue One also has a Chirrut is
Donnie Yen's character.
Right. It's like a protector of the wills or the follower of the wills, which is an introduction to a new way of looking at the Force. And then on Star Wars Rebels is a creature called the Bendu, who also claims to have found a third way that isn't like light side, dark side, but something else. You could still be a Force user, but this movie might be the last time that like the Jedi Order has their beliefs represented in some sort of way. So Rey might get some sort of new training because, I don't know, maybe she rejects being a Jedi. Maybe Luke doesn't want to make more Jedi since Kylo Ren killed the last bunch.
That makes sense, actually. Right. Yeah, he tried to bring the Jedi back. It blew up in his face. So maybe plan B, whatever. Yeah.
Well,
right?
Given that, I feel like it's been confirmed that like Rian Johnson had to rewrite a lot of his script because The Force Awakens changed a lot in post. Like what he was already hard at work before that movie came out, but it changed. So if you're saying the title has been the same since the very beginning, I feel like that would almost definitely suggest that it's Luke, because he couldn't have known a lot of what else was going to happen in The Force Awakens.
Well, yeah, but The Force Awakens wasn't really like a Force movie, you know? Like in terms of how much we've dealt with the religions of the Sith and the Jedi, that's really mostly been prequel territory. So if Rian Johnson's going to bring it into the, you know, we've never really heard Luke Skywalker talk about the Force with any sort of authority. And I mean, even the expanded universe stuff that's happening now with comics and novels, he's still sort of a novice. So this might just be like finally closing off Jedi also as a way of further distancing, you know, themselves from what nobody really liked, which is the Jedi as a political, religious knight.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I feel like if they do more of that stuff that was in the prequels, people like me are not going to like it.
Well, the prequels are kind of sort of quietly about how, you know, how limited the power of the Jedi's ended up being, right? Like how it's about their downfall. And, you know, maybe this whole 9-film saga can end up being about like the death of the Jedi Order and the birth of something new.
Yeah.
But Dave, what do you make of this Skywalker thing? What do they call it? The Skywalker saga or whatever. I feel like everyone on Twitter was yelling about that. That they defined as the Skywalker saga.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of heavily implies that we're dealing with another Skywalker besides Luke and Leia. I mean, morbidly, because, Carrie Fisher won't be able to be in this trilogy.
She wrapped her filming on this one, right?
Yes, I believe so. I don't think there's going to be any sort of digital extension of Carrie Fisher in this movie or in the future.
But do you think they'll kill Leia in this movie?
Well, from my understanding, and this is all speculation and like spoilers from production, so they're old, is that there's a significant part of the movie where Leia's in some sort of distress, like a coma or injured, and that's when the Laura Dern character makes like a move to sort of control the resistance in her place, and Poe Dameron has to, you know, stand up for the Leia Organa thing. But I do know that they were planning at least at some point to have Leia and Kylo Ren meet. Whether or not that ended up in this part of the saga, or whether that was they're going to save it for a trilogy capper, is, We may never know that until eight's released.
That would bum me out so hard.
I hope 8 is not a movie in which Leia is mostly in a coma. It does sort of make sense if you think about it that like 7 ended up being the Han Solo movie. It sounds like 8's going to be the Luke movie. Yeah. So like maybe 9 was sort of planned as the Leia movie.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know. I know I'm being a bummer. I'm sorry, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Seeing Poe Dameron like stand up for what Leia means, I feel like I'm just going to like weep in the theater if that happens.
I feel like, yeah, the internet might like that, right? Hmm? Oscar Isaac
and Carrie
sticking
Fisher.
Sticking up for Carrie Fisher, yeah.
They work Gary Fisher the dog in there somehow just to really connect the things he doesn't like.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Gary being in the next Star Wars movie, I actually would say is almost certainly going to happen.
Yeah?
That's something that Carrie Fisher advocated from like on the stage of every Star Wars celebration with Gary. It's like, when are they going to put Gary in a Star Wars movie?
Have there been any dogs in Star Wars before?
Have there been dogs?
Like, have we ever seen a dog in the Star Wars universe?
I like how much of this episode is to put it to dogs now.
Yeah, right. Speaking of dogs. I
mean, I'm not sure that we've ever seen...
I don't think so, right?
Obviously, like, Droopy McCool is a big blue dog that plays the clarinet.
That's true.
And we've seen, you know... quadruped dog-like creatures, but I don't think we've actually seen legit. He'd probably have to get some makeup, but he also has like that tongue that's constantly hanging out, so I feel like Gary would be easy to make up in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
I feel like we just have to rely on the Chewbacca character from Spaceballs, who's, what's his name? Woof? John Candy character?
Yeah. He's called Woof, right? I can't remember.
Barf.
Barf. No. Oh, yeah. Wait, is he?
His name is Barf, according to Netflix, IMDb. But he's got, like, big dog ears.
Yeah, he's a big dog.
Clearly, we should all be watching Spaceballs. Okay, so general, we're thumbs up on The Last Jedi?
I'm just psyched that we're back in, you know, the swing of another Star Wars season. It may not feel like it's been 3 weeks to you, but it feels like it's been 3 weeks to me.
Listen, there was a dude watching The Force Awakens on his phone next to me on the subway, and I was like, I got excited, you know? Spring made me want to watch it again. I watched it like a month ago. And I still haven't seen Rogue One, so like I have a whole other Star Wars treat waiting for me.
And everyone just stopped talking about Rogue One. It feels like 3 weeks, that was it.
Yeah, that's true.
Well,
yeah, I mean, I'm sure it'll get its day in the sun again, but, you know, it is funny.
It just crossed like $1 billion.
It did. It made $1 billion in so like a month.
Nobody, I guess, it feels like everybody talked about Rogue One like really intensely for 3 days.
Right.
But it didn't continue. I think that's like, if I had one problem with Rogue One, and I think I said it, it's that I like the Skywalkers and I like the Force. And this was a perfectly good, you know, Star Wars movie about a Star War. But, you know, I'm happy to be back in The Last Jedi territory. It's right there in the title. I'm going to get what I want.
Yes.
Yeah, Rogue One doesn't give you all the, like, speculation about where the universe is going. And I feel like The Last Jedi gives you all of that.
Truth.
Yes. Plus Rian Johnson making a Star Wars movie.
I know, man.
Yeah, and apparently Snoke's going to be a puppet. I'm so psyched.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
That's very exciting. I did not know that.
I didn't know that either.
That's
wait.
I feel like
these are the kinds of so last year when Patches
Yeah,
was
Dave
his,
brings me the hot rumors. Yeah.
Yeah, we used to avoid these and I actually went relatively unspoiled for Force Awakens and now I feel like these are just flying at me, but I can live with it.
Well, there's definitely going to be a puppet on the planet with Rey and Luke because we saw them carrying pieces of it from like aerial photos. So, I think I'm really excited because I think this is going to be a weird-ass Star Wars movie. But I think we're ready for that.
Do we think we won't get a trailer till May 4th?
I'm hearing a lot of Super Bowl speculation, but also Disney has better movies that are in more trouble they need to push on the Super Bowl with those ad buys. So
yeah.
We'll see. They could hold to April if they wanted to.
When did we get the first Force Awakens teaser? The one, the really brief one.
It was in the November before.
Yeah, right. It was. I was visiting relatives for Thanksgiving when I wrote it up. I remember it well. And you know, people cried when they saw the Millennium Falcon like flying over the desert. What will they do now?
Cry. Yeah, they see Carrie Fisher.
Oh well.
Yeah.
I guess that leads us into our next segment, doesn't it?
Let's transition with some music.
You can take my heart, you can take my
Friday brought the inauguration of Donald Trump as president, whether or not you are quite able to believe it, and I'm not totally. And I didn't watch that because I don't know, valued my time more. And then on Saturday, somewhere around 3 million people. Is it 3 million people in the country or around the world? I feel like all the estimates are really crazy. Maybe 3 million in the country?
I think it was about 3 million in the country. I think that's what I saw.
A ton of people marched in the streets. It was a women's march, but I think it was kind of effectively described as an anti-Trump march. And, you know, we've gotten called out by some people for being political on this podcast. I'm not sure that we're going to stop doing that. It's an interesting time. But there was kind of...
certainly not.
Well, okay, fair enough. But there's an interesting pop culture angle on all of this. And I think it's really well described in an article that our friend, my colleague Joanna Robinson, wrote on VanityFair.com about how Princess Leia became like a really potent symbol in these marches. Like her face was on a lot of posters. There was this art made by a woman whose name I can look up in Joanna's article. Hayley Gilmore, who had this kind of like, you know, lithograph of Princess Leia, and it said a woman's place is in the resistance. I personally saw a ton of Rebel Alliance logos on signs everywhere. With the experience you guys had either being at the marches or watching it, did you guys notice this, that like Princess Leia and Star Wars imagery is becoming part of this resistance that we have going on?
Yeah, I mean, I knew a few people who went who were wearing Rebel Alliance pins. My friend, Sonia, I'm sure she wouldn't mind being shouted out on this podcast. She taped a picture of Leia to her back.
Nice.
With the resist. I think it might have been that. Well, it was one of those resist. I've seen a lot of them.
Yeah, there's many.
And it's been proliferating already, I feel like.
Well, and I think Carrie Fisher's death kind of inspired a lot of people to really like dive into Leia as a feminist icon, which is, you know, super valid. And so the timing definitely, I mean, it wasn't good, but it worked out to have everyone thinking about that already. Dave, I haven't talked to you about the Denver March at all.
Yeah, there was a lot of Star Wars representing at the Denver March. I wasn't actively participating in the march, but I was an observer. And I guess, I don't know if not being in the march but observing it from an ally position makes me an ally. But
yes,
point
but,
being,
wait, what does that mean? Did you go in person?
He watched. He went to watch.
I went to watch.
Ooh.
I went to go see the crowds, and I went to go see the people observing the crowds. Or actually, it was the same way with the like whole "Not My President" march that happened right at like close after the election. It's that I kind of go to these things because to be a number in a mass, or to just be surrounded by the feeling, because I feel like the feelings. Oftentimes, the thing that I get the most out of it, that's a really selfish way to talk about a protest. But
how is that different from being a protester?
I know. Sometimes I'm a protester, and sometimes I'm chanting. Sometimes I'm just in the group. I mean, I don't know. I think registering discontent in a mass is good, but I'm never going to be like the person, you know, dressed like Princess Leia with a really, really clever sign.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, like,
I went to go look.
I went to the march in New York and, like, for the most part was in a group of people standing and not going anywhere because it was so crowded that you couldn't actually join the march. And I didn't make a sign. I was pushing a stroller. So, like, you know, I felt like I was participating, but it sounds like I did something really similar to what you did. It's just an interesting line to draw.
Well, I mean, like, I wasn't there to, like, hear the speakers or to meet with friends. It was just sort of like I kind of overslept my alarm. And then I went to go, you know, see who actually, you know, like gathered, and then couldn't hear the speakers that well. And so went back and started retweeting the march elsewhere as I sort of saw it. But in Denver, there was, I think I saw two people dressed as Carrie Fisher, or sorry, as Princess Leia. One actually had a sign that said Carrie Fisher sent me. And then a whole bunch of people just with Star Wars, like shirts or jackets. Maybe that's just what they needed to keep warm, but it seemed like it was they would be like high-fiving the Carrie Fisher sign people. So it was definitely here, which makes me feel like between that and tweets I saw that it was everywhere. So
yeah.
I think we might be getting a new national Trump protest icon in Princess Leia, which will be interesting. Because I definitely know the Rogue One writers who have tweeted political things got backlash before Rogue One came out. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Star Wars establishment starts treating these things, especially since like Star Trek, you know, came out with like Trek Against Trump and things like that, and was very clear as like a unifying franchise that they weren't for it. It's going to be interesting to see if all of a sudden, you know, Carrie Fisher, through her legacy as Princess Leia, is able to pull a multinational corporation one way or the other by the voice of the people.
To me, I feel like Disney can benefit from that attention and not do a damn thing to encourage it one way or another. Like, it's already bigger than they are.
But now I'm remembering, was it the CEO or somebody sort of made that sort of bizarre statement where they said, oh, well, Rogue One's, you know, not a political movie at all. Like, it has absolutely no... Right, he went a little too overboard, like trying.
Yeah, that was Bob Iger, but like
Bob Iger, right. Like, is he going to do something like that again? I guess is the question.
Well, Bob Iger's on an advisory board to Trump, which is interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, it could end up being a backdoor thing. Like, there was already calls to have more Princess Leia, you know, product that wasn't Slave Leia, and so like all of a sudden they could just, you know, suddenly do that and reap the benefits of her being an icon in resistance to whatever, but a resistance icon for sure. And I think, you know, if Disney leans into that and doesn't go, I don't know, a direction of pretending like it's radioactive, I think that's that benefit, I don't know, fan relations. Star Wars doesn't need its fans anymore, which is kind of creepy. Like, did you guys notice that last year?
Wait, explain.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you mean. Yeah.
Like, we're in a constant role of new Star Wars things that, because The Force Awakens was successful, every new step is covered, regardless of if it's new Legos or if it's, you know, a new product of makeup based on something. So I kind of feel like right now we're in like a one or two movie. I think we're going to go this way all the way through Han Solo, where Disney's telling us what we want and the production ball is like so far behind the like fan mentality that we're adapting to what we're being given, not necessarily dictating what Star Wars is going to become yet. I'm hoping this is a pivot point where we can sort of reclaim Star Wars from product back into like a cultural thing that is capable of, like, I don't know.
Of interpretation.
It's like Star Wars when Disney makes.
Right, it's like how Star Wars Day died when Disney bought it because Disney decided that it was going to do, like, Force Friday and Celebration. It's like, no, everything's going to be official now. But Star Wars Day was, like, May the 4th, was, like, made by the fans and, like, is a reaction to that. I want more of that in Star Wars fandom, and I kind of feel like we've had a year of lockstep every press release being met with hope, like we just did for The Last Jedi in our previous segment. And
well, yeah,
the Princess Leia stuff in the marches is making me feel hopeful that, you know, we still are able to reclaim things.
Yeah, maybe that'll be the battleground. Like, maybe something like the use of Leia's image, you know, becomes some point of division. Because you're right. I mean, like, essentially everything they do, there's so much goodwill because people are just thrilled that Star Wars is good again, right? I mean, they're still riding that wave. I mean, I guess now I'm starting to think, like, well, what happens after episode 9? Do you think they've got a concrete plan? Do you think they have a vague plan? I mean, obviously, you know, there's business spin-offs. Is good. I'm sure they don't want to wrap it up with episode 9. I'm sure episode X is at least on their minds.
Well, I'm really hoping that there's somebody who is already building to that, a la your Kevin Feige balance at Marvel, where he's like, we're going here, but I'm also willing to change that along the way. But as long as everybody's consistently saying we're going here. So I'm hoping that we'll eventually see the crack of what they plan to do after, you know, after 9. But I really hope they open it up to some sort of fan reaction. And like, I don't know what that would be in, what are we talking about? 2021? 2020, but I'm hoping that Disney's open to it, and I guess more reactive than they are with the Marvel side.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this Carrie Fisher, you know, presence and protest that I assume are going to continue could affect some of that. Although Disney, I think, is going to do a whole lot of work to pretend it just doesn't exist and continue as they want to.
These movies aren't political, people.
No, No.
There's no political thing that you could ever even think about them. They're about a fantasy world.
Yeah, they're not about governments or rebellions or anything like that.
Right. Or dictatorial states, anything like that.
I wonder what politics people try to read into Star Wars when it first came out. Like, do people see like Vader as a Nixon metaphor? I've never thought about this before.
I mean, no one was required to write constant hot takes. It was a real
Who's writing hot takes on this podcast?
I'm not saying we are. I'm just saying.
Never read a take in my life.
Political writers back then, I don't think were required to watch Star Wars and come up with an idea.
Yeah, there weren't.
That'd be a really dedicated parody account. Is Entertainment Reporter from the 1970s?
That'd be great. Like a content maker in the 1970s, like trying to be like All the President's Men. Is this about Richard Nixon?
Why All the President's Men Can't Win Best Picture?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God, yeah. I'm exhausted thinking about it.
Oscar nominations tomorrow, guys.
Oh, I gotta rest up. This weekend brought Split, which is a new movie by M. Night Shyamalan that, as I just learned, made $40 million, which is crazy. M. Night Shyamalan is back. But the $40 million with the people did not include me or Dave. We didn't see it. So, David, we needed you here to talk to us, not just about Split, but about the ending of Split, which I like. First of all, I want to know if you think that is part of what brought people to go see it, that they heard it had a crazy twist ending, which was the whole M. Night Shyamalan formula in the past. And second, how did he pull off a twist that actually got people back on board because we got so sick of his twists? And you have free reign. By the way, we're spoiling the twist in Split in this conversation.
Yeah, watch out, guys, because I did not contribute my precious dollars. I did go to a press screening, but I experienced Split completely free of any spoilers. I did not know. I didn't even really know it was going to have a twist. I figured there would be something, but and it was one of the most satisfyingly bananas twists I can really remember in years. And you have to assume the split, the twist talk drove some of the word of mouth, right?
They screened it at Fantastic Fest in Austin in like September, and people were like, oh my God.
The reaction was very strong.
Split. And so that buzz for however far it's traveled has been going on since then.
How did I miss that there was a twist? I just heard. It's like, Shyamalan made The Visit, was it just last year or no, maybe. 2 years ago, I guess. 2 years ago, because it is 2017 now. And, and that was like a fun, cheap horror movie that had like a sense of humor and just, lacked all of his portentous nonsense. And so there was sort of that hint of like, oh, maybe Shyamalan's back. And here he's making another movie with Jason Blum. He's making like a low budget horror movie. You got James McAvoy, he's got 23 personalities, I just thought it was going to be like another silly genre film, which it basically is. But then, I'm just going to spoil it. As you guys know, it turns out it's a sequel to Unbreakable. A 17-year-old movie that was like a moderate hit. In 2000, right? I mean, how else would you describe Unbreakable? Sort of a cult favorite?
A movie that he has talked about, in my previous life at Cinema Blend, we would constantly write about people being like, yeah, we might make a sequel of this thing. And Unbreakable definitely came up a lot, way out of proportion to how popular a movie it was at the time.
I have the scoop. I've been reading all these interviews of his. Apparently, this character, the McAvoy character in Split, was in his original Unbreakable script. And then he decided to take it out because he thought it was, too much business. But this was intended as like a sub-villain in Unbreakable.
Okay.
A guy with multiple personalities.
It has been totally unclear to me what this has to do with Unbreakable. Like, this seems to be a totally unrelated character, and then Bruce Willis shows up at the end.
Yeah, I guess let me try to summarize. So yeah, you've got this movie about a guy who kidnaps three girls, locks them in his basement. He has 23 personalities. They're all different, and they're all warning that a 24th personality is about to emerge called the Beast. That is going to be super strong and sort of somehow make James McAvoy's body, you know, invulnerable to bullets, and he's gonna, you know, essentially gonna take over the body and run around like a maniac. And so the whole movie plays out with you not quite sure what the Beast is or if it's even real. And then at the end, the Beast comes out, and you know, he rampages around, and he, you know, he escapes scot-free. And in the last scene of the film, the news of the Beast, who the news has dubbed him the Horde because he has 24 personalities, is playing out on the TV, and you see there's Bruce Willis from Unbreakable, David Dunn.
Okay.
And he's sipping his coffee and he's watching the TV, and he references Mr. Glass, the Samuel L. Jackson villain that he beat in Unbreakable, and then he walks out of the diner.
Holy cow.
That's what happens. So he says they called him Mr. Glass.
With this formula, like, any movie can be a sequel to any movie. Like, I can make a movie and then at the end, like, Charles Foster Kane shows up and sees it on television. It's like, oh, it's in the same universe as Citizen Kane.
I mean, it is. Before Dave interjects, I will point out Unbreakable was a Disney movie. That was a Touchstone movie. Split is a Universal release. So, I don't know. There must have been some negotiating going on.
I'm sure Disney was like, we have all of the Marvel movie money we could possibly
Yeah, take Unbreakable.
Yeah, who cares?
But wait, what did you want to say, Dave?
Oh, I was going to say, like, Unbreakable is about a guy who experiences trauma by falling into, like, or his weakness is water, so he experiences, like, some sort of trauma that gives him superpowers. Isn't the exploration of, like, trauma-based powers the Unbreakable universe?
It is. I mean, and that's what Split's kind of about, is this this character who thinks that those, you know, who have suffered sort of trauma-based mental illnesses, those are like the evolved humans, and everyone else is going to have to, you know, bow to them, or, you know, I mean, to be more specific, James McAvoy is going to eat their stomachs, which is what happens in Split, by the way. And so when you're watching the movie, I mean, this is why the twist worked for me. When I'm watching this movie, I'm just sort of scratching my head and a little bit and going, I feel like Shyamalan's overplayed his hand again. He's doing this wacky mental illness thing. And, you know, maybe he's taking a serious topic and sort of, you know, turning it into this weird cartoonish horror movie. And I don't know if this is going to land at all. And then it turns out it's the Unbreakable universe, which is a comic book universe and is about a superhero. I mean, a very moody, grim superhero, but nonetheless,
like, moody, grim superheroes are what we're all about.
And so suddenly, like, you know, the cartoonishness of it makes more sense. I mean, I know everyone doesn't agree with me about this, but that's why the twist landed for me. And as someone who's, as for my podcast, watched every M. Night Shyamalan film and sort of seen that guy try to top himself and then sort of get lost trying to top himself and then get lost trying to remember what it is that was good about him in the first place, it's kind of amazing to me that he's finally just figured out that the best movie ever made was Unbreakable, and you know, why not just go back there?
But that movie, that you don't think that was his best movie, right?
My personal favorite Shyamalan movie is the Village, but everyone yells at me when I say that.
I mean, I like The Village, but it's a Sixth Sense. Sixth Sense is amazing.
You were the guest on our Sixth Sense episode,
yeah,
Katie.
Yeah, it's a backdoor plug for me being on the Sixth Sense podcast. Listen to it.
Yeah, a year and a half ago or so.
Yeah, so long ago. Get those traffic numbers. So has there been any indication since this that, like, that this means another Unbreakable movie is happening?
Yes. Okay. He's making Unbreakable 3 or 2 or whatever you want to call it. 2.5.
Say, hang on.
Broken. Unfixable.
Yeah.
Split break.
But it's, like, for real happening?
I mean, so says M. Night Shyamalan, but what, do you want to doubt that guy? I mean, he made a secret Unbreakable sequel under our noses.
It's true. I mean, this did make me think of 10 Cloverfield Lane. Not that it was, like, a secret Cloverfield sequel, because it really wasn't in a lot of ways,
right.
But that you know, it was kind of this like project that no one was paying any attention to until all of a sudden it was in this franchise. Like, is that the only way we can be delighted by surprises? If it's like, oh, it's a franchise. We didn't know. Like,
it's true. It is a little sad that, yeah, we're excited that another cinematic universe got created.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, is that, Dave, you're a big fan of cinematic universes.
No, that's not sad. You guys are crazy. No, everything should be connected. I want all the Pixar Easter eggs to be examples of how all the Pixar movies take place in the same universe.
Oh, God, you're a monster.
Dies out, that is ruled by sentient cars.
That's horrible.
No, thank you. At least keep the Brad Bird movies out of it. You can have the rest of them. They can all be connected. Where Brad Bird
then
is
all
sacred.
The sentient cars get like trashed by Wally, right? So, and then we are all fat. And I don't remember how the timeline works out. But, I mean, like, I feel like there are movies where you're like, oh my God, the end still, that are not franchise films. I'm just not sure if we're like, I think we've learned how to make those sequence-based or action-based things. And I don't think we're elevating the twist as much as we do during the days of M. Night Shyamalan. If we were, Blair Witch would have been a hit last year, because that movie just fucking went off the rails in the last like 15 minutes.
But maybe Blair Witch should have carried it all the way through to release like this did. Maybe saying eventually that they were a Blair Witch movie, that was the mistake. They should have just been called the Woods until you went into the theater.
And then it started with the end of Blair Witch.
Exactly. Then it starts and you see the weird twig monster thingy and you're like, oh my God, this is a Blair Witch movie.
That would have been pretty cool.
I mean, I like that idea, but then I feel like I'm arguing for the exact same thing we were arguing against when we were talking about like Drive getting a horrible cinema score because people think it's a Fast and Furious movie. So like there's a line between misrepresenting and being able to hide your like excellent thing. I don't know. Without having seen Split, I don't know if it crosses it, but at least in like the slight reverberations I heard about the spoiler lasting until now, it sounds like Split hits the balance between it's a good enough movie without the twist.
Yeah.
The twist just sort of like gives you that kick out the door.
When the movie ends, and I should say, the way the movie reveals its twist is James Newton Howard's Unbreakable score comes up on the soundtrack. And I at least was immediately like, huh, this is very familiar music. Like it's a nice little subtle like note for what is about to happen. It's when James McAvoy is giving his final villain monologue. But Split's pretty good without the twist. I mean, like I say, it's it's got that Shyamalan problem of trying to be a B movie, but also trying to have some sort of weighty meaning and not quite knitting the two threads together. But in terms of like, I mean, especially when you're comparing it to like the other Blumhouse movies or, you know, the sort of horror movies of the moment, like it just has a visual scene. You know, he's a good visual storyteller. It's scary, but it doesn't have any jumps or it doesn't have any like sort of unnecessary bits of violence or gore. It's all, you know, in sort of placing
wait.
You in an unsettled space. And
you
like
said he ate people's stomachs, but it doesn't.
Okay, look. At the end, he eats a tummy, but like it's just for a second. You don't really see anything.
We needed to see the beast.
Look, and the beast is mostly communicated through performance. That's just James McAvoy kind of huffing and puffing. I mean, he's going for it. You guys know James McAvoy. He doesn't mess around. Like, you know, if you want,
he's not do things by half.
But I mean, it's funny that you said 10 Cloverfield Lane, because it's like this is the opposite of that. And because if Shyamalan was doing the 10 Cloverfield Lane thing, then this would have been called 10 Unbreakable and would have had nothing to do with Unbreakable. It would have just turned out to be another weird little moody movie. And he did the exact opposite thing. And I mean, it's ballsy. I mean, it's essentially Shyamalan sneaking into his new wave of low budget horror movies, just reminding us like, hey, I'm an Oscar nominated director who used to make big box office hits. So like, don't you want me to do that again?
Well, and it feels like this came at the exact right point where he'd had the visit. He had kind of this clout again where the studio was confident enough that people would see an M. Night Shyamalan movie that they could then hide the twist. Unlike Blair Witch, where like no one knew who this guy was who made that movie. Like they had to sell it on something.
Yeah.
He got just enough credibility back to be able to do it.
Good for you, M. Night.
Good for you, M. Night.
Highest grossing director of color in the history of Hollywood.
What?
I looked that up today.
Wow. Wow, I really thought that like F. Gary Gray would have like
F. Gary Gray's not in the top 10. Well, he might be in the top 10.
Did you say not in the top 10?
I want to look it up again because number two I remember was surprising.
What about like Tim Story?
Tim Story is high. Tim Story is up there.
He must be. I mean, like Fantastic Four and Ryan Long.
Oh, Justin Lin is high as well. Don't forget about Justin Lin.
Or James Wan, too.
Yes, James Wan's up there.
Now I want to see this list. This is tangent. Well,
I can try and cobble. Yeah, no, it goes. M. Night Shyamalan, Justin Lin, Tyler Perry,
mm-hmm.
James Wan, mm-hmm. and then number five is Tim Story.
There we go. And F. Gary Gray, I guess.
Yeah, you got F. Gary Gray. You got Antoine Fuqua. Uh-huh. You know, you got some other guys up there. Alfonso Cuarón. Don't sleep on him.
No.
He's made some money.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, but what he needs to make is an Unbreakable movie, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Everyone should make an Unbreakable movie.
Oh,
yeah.
If you
don't like Marvel's DC superhero universe, here's an open source superhero universe created by M. Night Shyamalan.
I forgot that F. Gary Gray is directing the next Fast and Furious, so he's really going to rise up those ranks pretty soon.
He might leapfrog. That's also why the next Fast and Furious movie is probably going to be really bad.
Ooh. Shots fired at F. Gary Gray.
I don't mean to be a naysayer, but I don't like F. Gary Gray, guys.
Mm. But you know what Fast and the Furious needs to do is make a backdoor sequel.
They did. Oh, God. They did.
They need to do it again.
We can go back and look, but like they did it like so long. Or what is it? The backdoor.
Oh, no, Tokyo Drift just suddenly having Vin Diesel in it at the end and being like, and that takes place on a different place in the timeline.
That takes place around between 6 and 7.
I mean, that's kind of what Unbreakable's doing, right? I mean, I guess it was like it had the title right there. Like you kind of knew going in that it was related. But like the surprise appearance at the end, they were doing Nick Fury before Nick Fury.
It's like you're doing Nick Fury, except no one knows you're watching a Marvel movie. It's also by default like the best movie Bruce Willis has been in like 5 years.
Oh, I was waiting for that.
Poor Bruce.
Someone was like, "How'd they get Bruce Willis?"
They called him on the phone.
Yeah,
I mean, Bruce Willis doesn't give me the impression that he's like really like itching for work. He just like makes bad movies. Oh, he was.
Well, then why does he make all these movies that like film in Bulgaria or whatever? God knows what they're called.
Yeah, he's been in a bunch of movies I've never heard of. Rock the Casbah. Sin City, A Dame to Kill For, Red 2, G.I. Joe Retaliation, A Good Day. Yeah, it's Looper. You got to go back 5
Looper's
years.
Looper's the last good one.
Yep.
Yeah. Usually when this happens, we learn like 2 years later they had like major tax problems.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like.
Like Bruce is the only one left holding Planet Hollywood stock or something. He's tested. just dig himself out of that hole.
He thought he could turn it around. That was the problem.
Let him host a celebrity. Okay, so.
On backdoor sequels, let me pitch you guys on something on a podcast so I could put it out there in the ether. I think that this is how ABC is going to save one of its fledgling sci-fi series in the future, is just make it Lost 2 at the end of the season.
Whoa!
Oh my God.
Why wouldn't you? Do you know which?
Like, what's the sci-fi show you turned into Lost?
No, see, that's the thing is I haven't, like, picked it yet, but I'm just like, if you're a flailing television network and you see these sort of things, like, happening in the entertainment industry, why not, you know, revive your... If the X-Files revival can work, why not juice, like, a little tiny sci-fi series by... See, the only reason I think it has to be done retroactively is no one's going to give something 22 episodes to eventually get to Lost. So I think it has to be like retooled like halfway through and they're like, actually, this has been Lost.
Or what if they do the This Is Us thing and it's like the twist at the end of the pilot, which I guess was the Lost thing at one point. But, you know, you have a pilot that everyone's talking about because it's got this crazy twist at the end. What if that's it?
Yeah, it turns out they're all like Hurley's kids.
Oh, man.
Or it's just like, you know, they like wipe, dust off a thing and it's another Dharma station. And they're like, what's that? And everyone's like, oh, credits.
I'm all for it. Look, I'm all for bringing back Lost. If you're going to bring back whatever the hell it is they're bringing back, something every week. Bring back Lost.
I didn't even think about how I'd brought together
Will and Grace reboot should also be Lost.
Two massive Lost super fans. We should have had a whole nother Lost series with the two.
Let's talk Lost. I just rewatched all Lost just in the last few months. I did. It's rough. The The end's a little rough. The last season is tough to, your momentum begins to stall out.
Am I right that season 7 is the worst until it gets
season
to the
six,
end?
Katie? Season 6. We hold out hope for season 7.
Oh, so because season 7 is like all the sideways flashes.
No. There's no season 7. 6 is the last one, and that's
okay.
The sideways flashes. Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, but which one is where they're at the temple all the goddamn time?
That's 6. Yeah.
Yeah.
They spend a lot of time at that temple.
Yeah, the first half of Lost season 6 was probably the most frustrating time to be a Lost fan because the most people were paying attention.
Right, everyone's watching.
The least amount of sense.
Everyone was saying, "See, I told you this made no goddamn sense and was boring and stupid." And you were like, "No, I
like,
promise,
no, they're gonna
I
make
promise."
A lot of make sense. I swear.
The last season was so good. Season 5 of Lost remains the best. The best.
It made me so mad when the box set was shaped like the temple because like who gave a shit about the temple? I don't know who made that decision in the marketing department, but it was infuriating.
Oh, man, the temple. That's
okay.
All right. Well, I could actually talk Lost all night. So.
It's a ABC series, and then in the third episode, they're on like a little schooner off the shores of Hawaii or something, and they see a boat, and they take some pot shots at it.
Oh,
that would be great. Like,
finally. What shit was that?
Finally. What happened on that goddamn canoe?
And then you wait like another season and then they do like one more tie-in and then it just continues on and Lost fans go crazy.
Yeah,
in the
for
meantime.
Sure. I mean, I work for Viacom right now, but if anybody from ABC is listening, I got this Lost idea for you. It'll work on any of your series. Just like have some characters fly somewhere, they crash, they shoot some bullets. Lost 2. Let's do it.
Hey, Blackish is planning a spinoff. I feel like maybe we could work it into that.
Blackish is...
Oh my God, Black Lost. Lost.
Bring back Mr. Echo. He didn't die.
Yeah. Mr. Echo was not well used as a character, I'd say, so do it. Okay.
Yeah.
We got really good and off track. Does it for this week's Fighting in the War Room. David Sims, thank you so much for joining. This was a blast.
Guys, I've been a longtime fan, first-time caller. It's great to be here.
Where can people find you and your podcast on the internet?
I'm David L. Sims on Twitter. I write at The Atlantic, so I'm there. And my podcast is called Blank Check with me and Griffin Newman, who I think has been on Fighting in the War Room at least a couple times.
I think so.
And you can listen to us talk about directors who lose their minds and get to cash a bunch of blank checks from Hollywood that maybe they never should have gotten, or maybe they should have. And we have a lot
right
of
now?
Fun. We're about to start our Steven Spielberg series that is only DreamWorks. So it begins with The Lost World Jurassic Park, which is technically not a DreamWorks movie, but shut up. Because we're arguing that DreamWorks was the ultimate blank check. He got his own damn studio.
True.
Yeah. David Ehrlich's actually, he's on the one of the episodes, so get excited.
There you go, tie-in. Okay,
defending,
Dave, how about
Crystal
you?
Skull.
Where are you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You could find all of us at fightinginthewarroom.com and at facebook.com/fightinginthewarroom. And I'm back doing weekly rambling column posts about both Star Wars and superhero movies at splashreport.com. So check me out there and follow me forever.
Forever. I'm here. You can find me at vanityfair.com talking about some Oscar nominations. That's happening. I'm on Twitter at Katie Rich, KATEYRICH. I'm not the Katie Rich who worked for SNL. Don't tweet at me. Even though I feel like she got a bad rap, but don't tweet at me. But you can tweet at all of us at FITWR, where we'll talk to you and each other and answer your questions and talk about this week's lightning round question, which was...
This is going to be a contentious one on the Twitters. In honor of a dog's purpose, what dog movie isn't horrible when you need to see a dog movie, which I feel counts All Dogs Go to Heaven out just because you're going to cry, right? Yeah,
but most dog movies make you cry.
Yeah, you love
Homeward
sad
Bound,
dog movies
man.
Out
Come
there.
On.
Old Yeller?
Yeah.
Totally. Where the Red Fern Grows. That was a book.
Yeah. None of these things make you cry. Okay. that does us for this week's episode. We'll be back talking to you next week.
Make the monkey fly.